On this ninth day of August 2011 in San Diego, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We are in Chapter 3, Karma Yoga, text number 29. Prakrite guna sammudha, sajjante guna karmasu, Tana Krishna Vado Mandan Krishna Vinna Vachalihid. Translation. Bewildered by the modes of material nature, the ignorant fully engage themselves in material activities and become attached. But the wise should not unsettle them, although these duties are inferior due to the performer's lack of knowledge. Purport. Persons who are unknowledgeable falsely identify with gross material consciousness and are full of material designations. This body is a gift of the material nature, and one who is too much attached to the bodily consciousness is called manda, or a lazy person without understanding of spirit soul. Ignorant men think of the body as the self. They accept bodily connections with others as kinsmanship, the land in which the body is obtained as their object of worship, and they consider the formalities of religious rituals to be ends in themselves. Social work, nationalism, and altruism are some of the activities for such materially designated persons. Under the spell of such designations, they are always busy in the material field. For them, spiritual realization is a myth, and so they are not interested. Those who are enlightened in spiritual life, however, should not try to agitate such materially engrossed persons. Better to prosecute one's own spiritual activities silently. Such bewildered persons may be engaged in such primary moral principles of life as nonviolence and similar materially benevolent work. Men who are ignorant cannot appreciate activities in Krishna consciousness, and therefore Lord Krishna advises us not to disturb them and simply waste valuable time. But the devotees of the Lord are more kind than the Lord because they understand the purpose of the Lord. Consequently, they undertake all kinds of risks, even to the point of approaching ignorant men to try to engage them in the acts of Krishna consciousness, which are absolutely necessary for the human being. Om Jnana Tamadandasya Jnanandana Salakaya Chukshu unmidatam mena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master Srila Prabhupada opened my eyes with the torch light of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. It's interesting how the morning and evening class are practically on the same subject right now. So the first idea is prakriti guna sambudha, that in the thrall of material nature, one becomes totally bewildered by the modes of nature. This word sam, as we know, the prefix sam means completely. Sanya, sankirtan, sammuda. So Krishna is emphasizing that people just have no idea of what the reality is. We completely identify with the temporary body and the relationships with the body. And in that bewilderment, we accept certain duties. Certain functions go with that misconception. And Prabhupada quotes a nice verse here in the purport, though he doesn't quote the Sanskrit. This verse was spoken by Krishna himself, taking the role, it's interesting in the context of this verse, in the latter part of the 10th canto. Krishna was, I think it was with Vasudev, performing sacrifices. I forget what gathering it was. But there were these great sacrifices being performed, and all kinds of sages started to appear, even out of the sky. Narada Muni was coming, Agastya Muni, Angira Muni, all the great Munis and Yogis appearing. And Vasudeva was saying, oh, what a great opportunity. Please instruct me in the process of self-realization, you know, and how can I achieve my ultimate goal? And they were like practically, you know, laughing to themselves. Says, here's the father of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know, he has the Supreme Absolute Truth with him at all times. And yet he's approaching us for some instruction and self-realization. And so at that time, Krishna kind of got in the mood. And he also requested them. And he took the role of an attached householder. Because he had all his wives and everything, you know. So he says, oh yes, yasyatma buddhi kunapetu dataka. He's actually speaking as if he himself is in this mood. So this is the verse that Prabhupada's quoting here as very famous. And what it says is, yasyatma buddhi kunapetu dataka swadhi kalatra dishabhoma ijjadi yattirta buddhi salane nakarhij janesha bigyeshu saeva gokara. So a gokara means two things. It can be understood as a cow or a donkey. Or it can be understood as the donkey that brings the grass for the cow, the beast of burden, so that the cows can be fed. In any case, it's not a very good position to be in. So what's the criterion here for being thought of in that way by Krishna? First thing is yasyatma buddhi kunapetu dataka. This body is, if you think about it in an objective way, it's just a bag. It's just a bag, you know, draped over this skeleton. And in that bag are all kinds of abominable substances. If there's some kind of cut and blood starts to come out or anything, immediately it's like, wow, you know, let's take care of that. You know, we don't want it spilling all over the place. It's contaminating, we understand. When I came back from that little, we had this nice meeting. And Neil and Darla's place, out on 8, right? And, honoring Brijbasi. So I came back, it was about 10 o'clock, I really wanted to get to sleep. And what's at my apartment? It's a big crime scene. There's all these cop cars, there's, you know, that yellow tape. It's all over the corner, I cannot park my car. And the firemen are there. So what is going on, you know? And it's Saturday night, you know. So I parked the car and I asked one of the policemen, what happened? And said, oh, someone cut themselves. So, because there's all this blood. The firemen were scrubbing the sidewalk to get the blood off. There was all this blood all over the sidewalk. Did someone cut himself? I thought it was a suicide or something. No, they put their hand through a window. That window happened to be right next to my apartment. It's part of my apartment. I realized that. There's a big, you know, plywood sheet up there now. So somebody lost it. They were intoxicated or something and punched at a window and cut themselves so seriously that it turned into a crime scene. You know, but the point is that it's a serious thing. Suddenly, when the insides of the body start coming out, you know. So Krishna says, "Yasyatma buddhi kunapeti dati." It's a bag with the three dhatus, okay, mucus, bile, and air. You know, it's not fresh air. Mucus, bile, and air. And which one of those is really so pleasant? You know, mucus, bile, air. That's the balance of the body. Now, you know, we don't usually think of ourselves that way. And we think of ourselves as this body, but we don't think of ourselves as a bag, you know, walking around. But Krishna is actually, you know, saying it as it is. And someone is no better than a donkey, you know, if he just thinks that's me. This is all there is to me, you know. But everyone's thinking like that. They immediately identify with the place where they live. And that's another element of it. And who their, you know, parents are, the race, you know, the language they speak, all the desires of the body, the fears, everything is, that's that conglomeration, that's me. You know. So Krishna, that's foolish. And then there's then comes the mind part of it. Swadhi. All of it is buddhi and swadhi. The mentality that I am this body, which is just a bag of blood and bones. The mentality that these things are mine, relation to the body. And you listen, kalatra adishu, the wife, etc. Because that's where it expands. You know, the wife is known as stri. As soon as there, you know, the wife comes, then you need, you need a job, you need a place, you need a bank balance, you get all the in-laws and the relatives, and in this way everything expands. So that's mine. My in-laws, my job, my bank balance, my place, my job, my. So that's called swadhi. And that's also another element of gross illusion. And then, boma ijadi. Now, this means several things, but the way that Prabhupada always emphasizes it, as he says in his purport, that the place where I'm born is just a tirtha automatically because I was born there. You know? Bhoma Ij, it's worshipable. And you know, you have the Bosnians fighting against the Croatians, and you have the Palestinians fighting against the Jews, and you have, you know, it's constantly. And it's all because of the land, the nationalism. It's a great disease. And not even just nationalism, but parochialism within a nation. You know, we're southerners, you're northerners, you know. That's another element of being like a cow and an ass. And then the final one is to feel that just to go somewhere and take a bath is all that is needed for pilgrimage. You know, and you can expand it. Okay, yes, you know, I went to Mecca. Yes, I went to the Holy Land, Jerusalem. And now I'm back. You know, and my life is perfect just because I went there. Just because I went there. Now, in the Vedic culture, you go, and there's always water there. Generally a river, a sacred river someplace. Or even the ocean, you know. It can be a sacred place, like what Chaitanya said. But just to take a bath and then come back, that's not the pilgrimage. The real pilgrimage, says Krishna in this verse, is to go there and to inquire from the wise people who live there. You know, because they congregate there because it's a holy place. You go to Vrindavan and it's filled with learned people. You know, if I go to Vrindavan, I want to sit and listen to Bhujan Prabhu. He's been teaching Bhagavatam for 20 years as a course, systematically. You know, and I want to hear Mother Narayani. She was actually at the Rath Yatra. I didn't get to speak to her. Very learned lady. You know, it's very rare when you find a lady in the movement who gives class every day. You know, in a systematic way, and that's what she's done, giving class in this Bhakti Shastri, in Bhakti by Baba, more advanced. So anyway, that's the real essence of the pilgrimage, is to go and absorb, you know, the knowledge that's there, that's reposed within the learned sages there. Not just to take a bath. Taking a bath is good, but it's not the full thing. So this is what Krishna, you know, is just, the Prabhupada quotes this verse here. So this is called Guna Samhuda. Those who are, you know, partake of this, these illusions that I just mentioned and many others, Sajjanti Guna Karmasu, they're completely engaged and attached to the different varieties of the modes of nature and the things that are produced from the modes of nature. So those of us who know something, you know, the Krishna Bin, you know, Krishna really means everything. You know, those who are fully aware of the science of bhakti, the science of Krishna Kanda, Vedic science is spoken of in the Bhagavad Gita, should not, you know, go around trying to tell people, you're just an ass or a cow, you know. You're working like a fool, you know. In other words, Krishna is saying that you're just going to disturb their mind, you disturb your mind. The better to engage them in devotional service somehow. You know, this is the principle of giving someone a chance to do some kind of service. I remember there was a devotee who would go, we'd walk on the street, he would always ask people the time. So at least they're giving them, you know, doing some service. If the time is Agata Sukriti, that built, you know, that's called unknowing pious activity, you know. Now sometimes that can be very effective. I like to tell the story of how Jayapataka Maharaj joined the movement. How many of you have heard that? You remember that? So Jayapataka Maharaj was visiting San Francisco in the summer of love, 1967. And many, you know, young people all over North America. He's from Canada, and he came down there. So he's walking along probably Haight Street or Ashbury Street or one of those, Frederick Street maybe, and there was Jayananda. He was in a building one of the carts. This is what he did. Maybe it was 67, probably not 67, 68, 69, something. And, or maybe 70, when they had the first really big Rath Yatra in the Golden Gate. And, you know, he's working, you know, Jayananda's famous for, you know, building those carts and going all out. So, and Jayapataka Maharaj walks along, and you know, that was the era of, you know, flowers in your hair. You go to San Francisco and everyone's friendly and dancing around, you know. So there was a sense of community. I visited there in 68. I was a year late. But it was like that. You know, there were the diggers who would collect bread and give it out to the hippies on the street and stuff like that. So he said, hey, come on in. You know how to use a screwdriver or a hammer? Who doesn't? Yeah. Of course, yeah. Well, come on, you know, help me with this. Okay, sure, sure. So, you know, 6 hours later, you know, he had him working on the cart, you know, and meanwhile preaching to him. You know, so he was doing this activity, and which is transcendental. He may not have even known what it was. He probably didn't know what it was. But here was this friendly, ecstatic person named Jayananda, who engaged him, probably gave him some nice prasadam along the way, of course, you know. And before long, Jayapataka Maharaj was Jayapataka Maharaj. And you see the result. So that's why at the end of this purport, Prabhupada says something very interesting and touching. Krishna is saying, don't bother them. They're some muddhas. You know, they're so much in the modes that the transcendentalists, you know, do your business and don't agitate. But Prabhupada says, Krishna, the devotees are more kind than the Lord sometimes. They go out of the way, you know, to agitate. You know, you go down the street. In the early days, especially the kirtan, you know, people would get agitated. Now we're kind of a cultural icon. I was walking along the road here, and the whole, carload of people, you know, just beachgoers, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, and they're all, you know. It's like, oh, wow, something from the 60s or something, George Harrison, whatever they're thinking, you know. But in the early days, people got very agitated. I remember I got some beer thrown on me when I was chanting in Fort Lauderdale, you know, when they had the spring break. We'd go up there from Miami. This was the early 80s. And, you know, they pour down beer and stuff. And, okay. And even in India, I heard a lecture, in Juhu Beach, they were complaining that the noise being made from Hare Krishna probably makes the point. Just see how westernized we've become, how fallen the Vedic have become. They're complaining against the chanting of Hare Krishna. So the devotees go out of their way to stop people who may be completely in the modes, to try to give them a chance, because there's no other chance for them. They're actually walking. This is the vision of the great devotees. Recently, was it the 25th? I think it was the 25th anniversary of the disappearance of Gauri. Gauri was a great book distributor in this movement in the 70s and the 80s. And she completely absorbed the mood of selflessness and going out to save the people. She's the kind of book distributor who couldn't stand to stay back. You know, even on the holidays, you go out because you feel, oh, there's so many people. They could have gotten the book. That very person will never get another chance to walk off and go to hell. You know, to actually have that vision, that urgency. That's really, and that's the reality. And I have these wonderful recordings. We don't know the history, most of you, but in Los Angeles was a super center of book distribution in the mid to late 80s. And there was a whole house that they had that was just the women book distributors, a whole big apartment house. And she was living there, Jadarani was there, and other seniors, they would go out every day. And she was the most senior, and she would give these, seminars, or darshans, whatever, on book distribution. And I have some of those recordings, if you're interested in it. They play them every year. And Savas and Tadid were both, you know, great friends with her. And her mood of sacrifice and service, you know, to the deity and to the Prabhupada is a great inspiration for them. If you want to know how Savasana Tadid got to be Savasana Tadid, Tadid is a wife who's maintained that gift shop, you know, and goes to India and back at shopping, you know, and to go through this almost 25 years now. A lot of it, I think, is due to their association with Gauri. So I'll share those with you. And she really embodies the last part of this purport, where the devotees are so kind that they go out of their way. And if someone gets agitated, well, too bad, you know. I mean, it's like the example is given how a patient is lying on the hospital bed, and they may be delirious, and the doctor comes with the medicine or the treatment, and they think that they're out to, you know, kill them or hurt them. You know, and they may shake their hands or scream or yell. Well, the doctor finds a way, may sedate them or whatever, to restrain, so that they'll get the medicine anyway. You know, because that's the only hope for them. You know? So the same thing is there. People are so ignorant, they don't understand the value of this knowledge. So that's what this mood is. But in general, we are going about our business of advancing Krishna consciousness. And if people are opposed, if people are agitated, well, we tolerate and we go on. You know, we don't go out of our way to try to agitate them. But we're bold preaching is really the essence of this movement, to try to attract those who can be attracted. Any questions or comments on this particular verse? Bewildered by the modes of material nature, the ignorant fully engage themselves in material activities and become attached. But the wise should not unsettle them, although these duties are inferior due to the performer's lack of knowledge. Okay, let's go on. Mai sarvani karmani. Sanyasyadhyatma chetasa. Nidashir nirmamo bhutva. Yudhyasva vikatadvara. Therefore, O Arjuna, surrendering all your works unto me, with full knowledge of me, without desires for profit, with no claims to proprietorship, and free from lethargy, fight. Purport. This verse clearly indicates the purpose of the Bhagavad Gita. The Lord instructs that one has to become fully Krishna conscious to discharge duties as if in military discipline. Such an injunction may make things a little difficult. Nevertheless, duties must be carried out with dependence on Krishna, because that is the constitutional position of the living entity. The living entity cannot be happy independent of the cooperation of the Supreme Lord, because the eternal constitutional position of the living entity is to become subordinate to the desires of the Lord. Arjuna was therefore ordered by Sri Krishna to fight as if the Lord were his military commander. One has to sacrifice everything for the goodwill of the Supreme Lord, and at the same time discharge prescribed duties without claiming proprietorship. Arjuna did not have to consider the order of the Lord. He had only to execute his order. The Supreme Lord is the soul of all souls. Therefore, one who depends solely and wholly on the Supreme Soul, without personal consideration, or in other words, one who is fully Krishna conscious, is called Adhyatma Chetas. Nirashi means one who has Nirashi means one who has to act on the order of the master, but should not expect fruitive results. The cashier may count millions of dollars for his employer, but he does not claim a cent for himself. Similarly, one has to realize that nothing in the world belongs to any individual person, but that everything belongs to the Supreme Lord. That is the real purport of Mayi, or unto me. When one acts in such Krishna consciousness, certainly he does not claim proprietorship over anything. This consciousness is called Nirmama, or nothing is mine. And if there is any reluctance to execute such a stern order, which is without consideration of so-called kinsmen in the bodily relationship, that reluctance should be thrown off. In this way, one may become vigatadvara, or without feverish mentality or lethargy. Everyone, according to his quality and position, has a particular type of work to discharge, and all such duties may be discharged in Krishna consciousness as described above. That will lead one to the path of liberation. So I remember when I first read this verse, and then I read the first verse of the purport, I said, this verse clearly indicates the purpose of the Gita. I immediately memorized it. So let's look at this verse. So here the word sannyas is used. Now it's not used in the formal sense of the sannyas ashram, but the actual meaning is completely giving up. Sannyas. Here's this prefix sum again. In combination with the word nyas, it becomes sun. Just like in kirtan, it becomes sun kirtan. It's the same meaning, completely. Giving up the fruits of one's activity. And adhyatma chetas, as Prabhupada explains, one who is fully Krishna conscious. So the idea is that it sounds like it's slavery. But if one is fully Krishna conscious and giving everything up for the pleasure of Krishna, then that is a very blissful position. The whole idea is that when one fully surrenders to Krishna and serves him wholeheartedly, Krishna fills one's heart with the deepest pleasure, real spiritual pleasure, that doesn't depend on the senses. You see, it goes on, it continues, it deepens more and more. Material happiness doesn't do that. Whatever pleasures we find with the senses are very temporary and superficial. So surrendering all your works unto me with full knowledge of me. So, and nir ashir. So the word ashir or asha. Asha means aspiration. We sing it every morning in relation to Tulsi. My aspiration is to become your servant, right? It's a very common word in our language. The demons, they're bound by so many material aspirations, like ropes. Asha pasha, shatayah. Buddha, bound by hundreds and thousands of ropes of material desire. So here it says, nirashir, means no hopes, no aspirations in relation to oneself. Just like Dhruva Maharaj, a very good example. Dhruva started out with a very strong material desire. He wanted to have a fabulous kingdom, even greater than his father's, even greater than his great-grandfather's, Brahma. You know, he's just a little boy, but he's a very staunch Kshatriya blood, you know. So he determinedly went out, you know, to overcome any difficulties to get this kingdom. So that's a material desire. He met Narada Muni. Narada Muni encouraged him to go back. You're too young to perform severe austerities in the forest. His mother had convinced him that, what can I do? You know, she's Suniti and Suruchi. These names are very important. Suruchi means the most beautiful one. Suniti means the most ethical one. You know, Nitya Maman, in the end of the Bhagavad Gita, last verse, talks about wherever there is Krishna and Arjuna, there will be morality. That's Niti. So Suniti, she was most pious. But she couldn't help Dhruva. He said, God can help you. You know, Prabhupada tells the story that God, well, where's God? Well, I've heard that the sages find him out in the forest. Okay, that's where I'm going. So he goes out there, he meets Narada Muni, and Narada tries to convince him to go back. He says, no, you know, if you can't help me, thank you very much, I'm going anyway. So Narada gives him a whole process, which really is centered on bhakti. You know, it's severe meditation. This is Satya Yuga, after all. And he's, you know, there's all this meditation of pranayama, but there's also the chanting of the holy name, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, and also deity worship. Believe it or not, he gave him this deity worship to do, simple deity worship in the forest you can do with an earthen deity that's then dissolved at the end of the day, you build a new one. That's another kind of deity worship. And he's meditating within his heart. So with all of this, he's chanting, meditating, chanting, and hoping for the kingdom, chanting, meditating. And at the end, you know, he realizes Vishnu in the 6 months. Vishnu comes down. It's actually, according to the Lago Bhagavatamata, this is Prishni Garba, who's coming down. And a certain incarnation, a Leela avatar. And now, anything you want. You know, now you can get the kingdom or anything. I don't want anything now. It describes Dhruva's ecstasy when he sees Vishnu, how he becomes completely alive and he falls down on his face. He's crying, his hair is standing on end, he's shaking. All the senses are acting like the other senses. He's almost like licking up, you know, the lotus feet of Krishna, is described right in the Bhagavatam. So then he stands up and he's, you know, he wants to offer prayers. But just like Prahlad, he's only a 5-year-old boy, so you know, how much Sanskrit could he study? But he gets blessed with a conch, just like I think Nrisingadev with a hand, right? So as soon as he's blessed with the conch, all these prayers start to flow. And one of the prayers, although it's not mentioned in the Bhagavatam, it's in another shastra, is Prabhupada quoted all the time. And he says there, Stana Abhilashi, here's the word Abhilash, you see? Ashi. Stana Abhilashi. I wanted a stana. I wanted a position. You know, and therefore tapasi, I was situated in penance and austerity. And it's serious tapasi. But now I've achieved you. Pram Praptavan, Devaman Indraguyam, who are hidden away, even from the greatest demigods and the munis cannot get this darshan. Very rare to get direct darshan externally of Vishnu. You can see him in the heart, that's one thing, but to actually have him come before you is another. So now he's realizing, kacham vichinban. I was thinking of this kingdom, but I know it is as valuable as, who can say, what's kacham?
Glass.
Broken glass, broken pottery, that's kacha. You know? That whole kingdom, which is greater than loka, Brahma loka, because Brahma loka is after all destroyed, but he wanted a permanent kingdom. And now I think that whole thing is just like kacha. Because I've got this jewel, this divine jewel of your darshan. Kacham vichinban api divya ratnam. And then the famous line, who knows it? Svaman.
Kritartosmi ekvaram nayachi.
Yes, Svaman Kritarto Smi Vedang Niyache. O Master, O Lord, Svaman, Kritarto Smi Vedang Niyache. I don't want any kind of varam. I don't want any kind of benediction from you. You know, I don't want the kingdom anymore. But because he wanted it so much, and it was, you know, he had to rule for 36,000 years. But then he goes to his own loka, Dhruva loka, at the end. You know, he puts his foot on the head of death, and he gets up on the Vaikuntha plane, and he goes on. But who's he thinking of? He's so merciful. He's thinking of his mother. Suruchi. What happened to Suruchi? She was my Vartma Pradarshika guru. There's three basic kinds of gurus. What are they?
Vartma Pradarshika guru is the one who introduces you, shows you the path. And the Shiksha guru gives you instructions, and the Diksha guru gives you spirit.
Yes. You can have only one Diksha guru. You can have many Shiksha gurus. And generally, you have one Vartma Pradarshika guru who first shows you the path. So his mother was that guru. So the Vishnu Duta encouraged him. He said, don't worry, she's behind us. She's in another Vaikuntha airplane. She's on her way. So, nirashir, no desire, nirmamo budva, and no sense of proprietorship. You know, Prabhupada says that all irreligion starts in the first purport of the Isha Upanishad. I think it's the one to the invocation even. No, Isha Vashyamidam Sarvam. Yeah, because Isha Vashyamidam Sarvam, that's mantra one of the Isha Upanishad. It says everything belongs to God. Isha Vasham. This word Isha Vasham, you know, Ishwara, is the root of the word Aishwarya, of wealth. Aishwarya means controlling. If you control a lot of things, you have wealth. Wealth is a means of control. So, Isha Vasham Idam Sarvam, Yet Kinchit Jagatyam Yagat. Everything in the universe is only controlled by the Lord. So don't be greedy for what is not yours. You can have a right to take your quota, but not more than that. So nirmama, understanding that nothing is mine, is a means for advancement, because it's really true. And if nothing is mine, then it should be used for the real proprietor, namely Krishna, right? So in that purport, Prabhupada says, as I was explaining, that the root of irreligion is the misappropriation of the property of the Lord for our own purposes, at the end of the purport. And then with all of this understanding, you know, working for me, giving up the proprietorship to the fruits of one's actions, being situated in Krishna consciousness, yudhya sarvaka jadvara. Arjuns, do your duty. In Arjun's case, it's fighting. You can fill in on whatever our duty is. And vigata jvara. Jvara is a fever. Don't be feverish. You know, be very calm without being lethargic. In this case, it's a fever that makes you lethargic. But that word jvara means a fever. So this indicates the whole purpose of the Gita, and Prabhupada doesn't pull any punches in this purport. This is the standard, you know, we have to try to come up to. It's not easy because we're so used to being in our the bodily concept of life, and thinking of so many things that are ours, and not wanting to, you know, serve Krishna. But this is actually what it means to be Krishna conscious, to be in this consciousness all the time. And we need to have association of those who are like that, who are constantly, because otherwise, you know, what happens is, you know, this what reminded me with this nirashir nirmamol is that other the verse from Kunti, you know, janmaishraya shuta shivir, edamana madak puman, naivaharti vidatam vaitrama kinchana gochara. Krishna is a kinchana gochara. He can be approached truly by those who have no sense of proprietorship. This akinchana means exactly nirmama, you know, gochara. What are those things that generally stand in our way? Well, she categorizes them as four general principles of opulence, you know. Janma, Aishwarya, Shuta, and Shribir. So Janma is pride of birth. Now this is one of the advantages we have in the West, because we're so fallen, you know. Where can you really look at an aristocratic birth? Of course, you know, some people are born on the wealthy side of the tracks, you know, and they take pride in that. So there is some of that. It's foolishness. And then, of course, there's money, Aishwarya, Shuta, knowledge, education, and Shribir, beauty, physical beauty. If one is too much intoxicated, progressively intoxicated with these, then one cannot call on the Lord with deep feeling. One cannot call on the Lord with deep feeling. You may call on the Lord, you know, but you're not calling from the bottom of your heart. Because you have all these other shelters, these things that you're valuing, you know, as yours. You know. Where is the Trinat Abhisuni Chena? You know, Lord Chaitanya gave the formula. Trinat, if you want to chant constantly and purely, then there's this fourfold formula. Who can give me what the formula is? Bhakta Alec.
Consider yourself lower than a blade of grass.
Yes. That's number one.
More tolerant than a tree. Ready to give all respects to others and expecting them.
Yeah. Now just compare that to the other verse by Kunti. You can see that they're incompatible. If you're proud, you know, of your birth, your beauty, you know, education. That's a big one. You know, if you have a PhD. You may be poor and ugly, but you're still proud of that PhD. Yeah. So each one of them can take you away from Trinat Abhisuni Chena. And then tolerance. You know, who's tolerant these days? Any little insult, any little, you know, loss seeming in an... Oh, I'll sue you. All right, now I can sue. You know, the victim culture. It's just the opposite of tolerance. Just the opposite of tolerance. And giving honor to others. Everyone wants to get, you know, have their 15 minutes of fame, get on TV, you know. Look at me. You know, I'm somebody. You know, to fill up that void in their heart. You know, look, I'm famous. You know. Just the opposite. You know. And people don't know even who to honor. They're glorifying various demons and fools. You know. Yeah. So you have to know who to give honor to. Of course, the devotee gives honor to everyone. You know, that's another strategy. But the basic idea is that this is directly opposite to that verse of Queen Kunti. Which, those things prevent you from chanting sincerely. So, you know, this is also good for this verse. Because it's just near Ashir, near Mamon, nothing is mine. Okay, should we go on? Another one? Go ahead, brother.
Question about the previous verse, too. Krishna is advising them to not disturb these kind of people. But he's saying, but the devotees are more kind. But so just looking at what Krishna is saying, then how is Krishna proposing that these people will come to the point of knowledge? I mean, devotees of course are doing some...
In this particular instance, he's not. You know, yeah. I mean, he's heavy, and you know, in the 16th chapter, you know, he's cast them down, and then, you know,
yeah. You know.
in this particular instance, he's not. Now he comes back. Of course, Krishna is an ocean of mercy. I mean, you know, ultimately, and he comes as Lord Chaitanya, you know, to reach out to everybody, even the most fallen. And there's that key pastime with Jagai and Madai, where Nityananda, who's the personification of mercy. You know, he says to Lord Chaitanya, well, if you save these, this will prove that you're truly patit pavana. You know, the patit pavana. So Krishna does that, but he in the Bhagavad Gita, it's not evident so much. Hold on, yeah.
Couldn't it be that the other meaning is that the devotees are the Lord's mercy personified, and you cannot get Krishna's...
You can take it that way, yeah.
Without...
The devotees
are more kind than the Lord.
All that point is there, but here Krishna himself...
I know, because Krishna himself...
But Krishna's not saying that here, right?
Therefore the inner meaning could be taken as that. That's my...
Okay. No, but if you just read Bhagavad Gita, what Krishna is saying... I mean, of course, this is the... You know, Prabhupada is saying, yes, Krishna is not saying to disturb them. So what is...
But the devotees are more kind than the Lord.
I mean, that
so
point
how
is
how
there.
Is
that is not what I'm asking there. That point is there in the book. I'm asking something else.
All right, we'll discuss it later.
Other question I have is that the next verse, Krishna is saying therefore to Arjuna. So therefore means it's coming from the previous verse.
Yeah. Well, that therefore is there from Srila Prabhupada. He puts, you know, it's not there in the Sanskrit. But he's saying that in contrast to these guna sammudas, you know, you, Arjuna, You know, unless you want to be, you know, if you don't want to fight, you're Guna Samudra. But here's the contrast, like that. All right, let's go. Ye me matamidam nityam. Anutishtanti manavaha. Shandhavanto nasuyanto. Muchyante te pikarma bihi. Those persons who execute their duties according to my injunctions and who follow this teaching faithfully, without envy, become free from the bondage of fruitive actions. Purport. The injunction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the essence of all Vedic wisdom and therefore is eternally true without exception. As the Vedas are eternal, so this truth of Krishna consciousness is also eternal. One should have firm faith in this injunction without envying the Lord. There are many philosophers who write comments on the Bhagavad Gita but have no faith in Krishna. They will never be liberated from the bondage of fruitive action. But an ordinary man with firm faith in the eternal injunctions of the Lord, even though unable to execute such orders, becomes liberated from the bondage of the law of karma. In the beginning of Krishna consciousness, one may not fully discharge the injunctions of the Lord. But because one is not resentful of this principle and works sincerely without consideration of defeat and hopelessness, he will surely be promoted to the stage of pure Krishna consciousness. So let me say, actually, in answer to the, you know, continuing this question, I was just thinking, in chapter 12, Krishna is very expansive there, right? In other words, he gives the pure thing. You know, he says, look, Arjuna wants to know, what's the real ultimate? Is it the impersonal or the person? It's definitely the personal. Therefore, fix your mind on me, fix your intelligence on me, with great and transcendental faith, you will certainly come to me. That's pure devotion. But then as the chapter progresses, he comes down to the point of, even if you can't practice devotional service, at least, you know, be charitable. You know, don't be a selfish demon, you know, a self-angry, be charitable. And in this way, you eventually come to me. Why? Precisely because the devotees are going to be out there, you know, asking for charity, a little charity, so we can give you a book, you know, or a prasadam or something, you know, and you'll be open to that. And that'll be your key, that'll be your gata sukriti, perhaps, you know, take it. So here, you know, it's very clear that, you know, Krishna is saying if they follow this injunction with faith, now, here, you know, Prabhupada is making distinction between the fancy philosophers who have no faith in Krishna and the simple, you know, sweeper in the street who has faith in Krishna but maybe can't do much devotional service, is so entangled. The key element of faith being having an open mind and not being swept away by the false philosophy of, you know, atheism and all these different things. It's very difficult today because everybody's exposed to it. You know, they turn on the TV, look at the internet, there's all these crazy philosophies, and it's very hard to be just a simple person now, you know, to be a simple worker who's trying to do the right thing and has faith in God. You know, faith in God will, you know, that's not very... It happens, but it's more and more difficult, especially in highly technologized worlds like we have. But that's what Krishna is saying. If one has faith, shuddhamanta anasuyanta, and is not envious, then one has a chance to come in touch with the devotees who are out there, and in this way begin devotional service. Once again, the whole theme of this chapter is to work in such a way that we're not bound by our karma. Karma in both sense, meaning your activities and the results of your activities. Karma means many things. So the only way to do that, as explained in text 9, is to work in the mode of sacrifice. And those who want complete freedom must be working in that mood of sacrifice, in that spirit of sacrifice, at every moment of their lives. But the wonderful thing about Krishna consciousness is that if you start working that way, after a time, it's not much of a sacrifice. It's just fun. It's just pleasurable. Like what's the main sacrifice of this age? Bhakti Carlos. Sankirtan Jagya. Thank you. And what did we just have last Sunday? And a lot of Sankirtan Jagya. in front of Jagannath, in front of Balaram, in front of Subhadra, right? And who, you know, devotees wanted to go, right? Says, oh, I got to make that sacrifice. I got to trek. I got to schlep all the way up there to L.A. and jump up and down. You know? No. It wasn't like it. Oh, wonderful. There's Jagannath, smiling Lord, you know, and there'll be so many wonderful, so much nice music, you know, and we'll get to chant Hare Krishna for 3 hours straight, which you never get to do otherwise. Yeah, let's go up. That's a sign that there's some purification there. So what is once a jagya is no longer a jagya. It's pleasure. And that can be true at every moment. You can imagine, just try to imagine, you know, project yourself, okay, if you were a pure devotee, you know, and that every breath, every movement of your hand, you know, everything you did, every word you spoke was for the in love for Krishna, glorifying Krishna. And you were, and what's the result? The result is you're always in bliss and happiness. Nothing for me, everything for Krishna, but you're fully Krishna conscious. This is the whole idea. And who is Krishna? You know, the most delightful, loving, lovable person forever that there can ever be. That's the whole idea. You know, just think, you know, to give it an analogy, okay, the reflection. All right, that's when the mother loves a child. But, you know, puppy love, you know what I mean? You do something for your girlfriend or for your boyfriend, you know, it's that fresh time, it's completely innocent. And, okay, you know, you get a present or you cook something or you see them. You're taking pleasure in their being happy. That's the essence of real love. Your pleasure is in the pleasure of the beloved. And what comes back? More love. You see? It's just this exchange. It's like a substance, practically. You know? And you want to know perverted reflection? I'll tell you. I had this realization some time ago. On the lower end of the mode of ignorance, okay, you'll find magazines and papers like the National Enquirer and all of these things. And so much of it is this, celebrity talk. Who's loving whom? Who's had a baby? Who's doing this? The pairing and the separating, right? So within that, you know, if two attractive people are getting together, there's a certain pleasure there. Oh, they're in love, you know? Now, there's all kinds of perversion, you know, perverted reflections in there. But there's something attractive about it, that you take pleasure in others, beautiful people showing love to each other. You know, especially if you have a relationship with them. You know, your friend is getting... What is the whole thing of a marriage ceremony? Oh, my beautiful friend and friends are getting married. You know, you're taking pleasure in that. You see that? They're together, you know, that love. You're experiencing it as... So that's the reflection. The reality is that we can take infinite pleasure in bringing Radha and Krishna together. You know, and seeing their infinite love. And they're also loving us for that. We're not being ignored. Nobody can be ignored. Radha and Krishna have enough attention and enough love for all of us, every single entity in the world. Because that's one of the problems in material love, right? He loves me or he loves you. He can't love both, right? Envy, jealousy. That's how many murders take place in that place. But Krishna has... another, you know, personal relationship with everybody. So it's hard to imagine that the reality of that, but that's actually the reality. And when that flow is there, and you're serving Krishna, and you're feeling the reciprocation, then you just want more of it. That's where the greed comes in. You want more and more of it. Prabhupada just hated to sleep. Once he had that flow going, you know, and if the movement was going, and just imagine what it was like. To go through that whole struggle in India, you know, read in the life and preparation of the old, you know, 60, 70 years, you know, or 50 years from when he met his Guru Maharaj, and struggling, some successes, many failures, but really not much success, you know, and then to come, you know, and then just throw all caution to the winds, right? 69 years old, get on the boat. You know, no money, no friends. Now that's surrender. And then to see the whole thing grow miraculously, by the will of Krishna and late Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his Guru Maharaj. Now just imagine what Prabhupada was feeling there. You know, that sense of, you know, Krishna, the blessing of Krishna upon him for full surrender. So that's the kind of relationship that's real, that's reality. And it sounds, you know, very severe when we talk about sacrifice everything, don't want anything for yourself, only for Krishna. But actually that's the natural position of the soul, to be happy. Okay, we better adjourn and get ready for kirtan. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.